Chapter 139, Lockless. Stapes escorted Maloin into the room while Alvaron and I rose to our feet. She was dressed in gray and lavender, and her curling chestnut hair was pulled back to reveal her elegant neck. Maloin was followed by two serving boys carrying a wooden chest. The mayor moved to take his wife's elbow while Stapes directed the boys to set the chest to one side of her chair. Alvaron's manservant hurried them outside and gave me a conspiratorial wink before he closed the door behind himself. Still standing, I turned to Maloin and made my bows. "I am pleased to have the chance to meet with you again." "My lady?" I made the last a question, as I wasn't sure how to address her. The Lackless Lands used to be a full earldom, but that was before the Bloodless Rebellion, when they still controlled Tinue. Her marriage to Alvaron complicated things, too, as I wasn't sure if there was a female counterpart to the title of Mareshan. Maloin waved her hand easily, dismissing the issue entirely.
"Lady is well enough between us two, at least when we are closeted. I've no need for formality from one to whom I owe so great a debt."
She took hold of Alvaron's hand.
"Please, sit if you've a mind."
I made another bow and took my seat, eyeing the chest as casually as possible. It was about the size of a large drum, made of well-jointed birch and bound in brass. I knew the proper thing to do was engage in polite small talk until the matter of the chest was broached by one of the two of them. However, my curiosity got the better of me. "I was told you were bringing a question with you. It must be a weighty one for you to keep it so tightly bound." I made a nod toward the chest. Maloin looked at Alvaron and laughed as if he had told a joke.
"My husband said you weren't the type to let a puzzle sit for very long."
I gave a slightly shamefaced smile.
"It goes against my nature, lady." "I would not have you battle your nature on my account."
She smiled.
"Would you be so good as to bring it round in front of me?"
I managed to lift the chest without hurting myself, but if it weighed less than 10 stone, then I'm a poet. Maloin sat forward in her chair, leaning over the chest.
"Lerand has told me of the part you played in bringing us together. For that, my thanks. I hold myself in debt to you."
Her dark brown eyes were gravely serious.
"However, I also consider the greater piece of that debt repaid by what I am about to show you. I can count on both hands the people who have seen this. Debt or no, I would never have considered showing you had not my husband vouchsafed me your full discretion."
She gave me a pointed look. "By my hand, I will not speak of what I see to anyone," I assured her, trying not to seem as eager as I was. Maloin nodded. Then, rather than drawing out a key as I'd expected, she pressed her hands to the sides of the chest and slid two panels slightly. There was a soft click, and the lid sprang slightly ajar. Lockless, I thought to myself. The open lid revealed another chest, smaller and flatter. It was the size of a bread box, and its flat brass lock plate held a keyhole that was not keyhole-shaped, but a simple circle instead. Maloin drew something from a chain around her neck.
"May I see that?" I asked.
Maloin seemed surprised.
"I beg your pardon?"
"That key. May I see it for a moment?"
"God's bother!" Alvaron exclaimed. "We haven't come to the interesting bit yet. I offer you the mystery of an age, and you admire the wrapping paper."
Maloin handed me the key, and I gave it a quick but thorough examination, turning it in my hands. "I like to take my mysteries layer by layer," I explained.
"Like an onion?" he snorted.
"Like a flower," I countered, handing the key back to Maloin.
"Thank you."
Maloin fit the key and opened the lid of the inner chest. She slid the chain back around her neck, tucked it underneath her clothes, and rearranged her clothes and hair, repairing any damage done to her appearance. This seemed to take an hour or so. Finally, she reached forward and lifted something out of the chest with both hands. Holding it just out of my sight behind the open lid, she looked up at me and took a deep breath.
"This has been," she began.
"Just let him see it, dear,"
Alvaron interjected gently.
"I'm curious to see what he thinks on his own."
He chuckled.
Besides, I fear the boy will have a fit if you keep him waiting any longer. Reverently, Maelowen handed me a piece of dark wood the size of a thick book. I took it with both hands. The box was unnaturally heavy for its size, the wood of it smooth as polished stone under my fingers. As I ran my hands over it, I found the sides were carved. Not dramatically enough to attract the attention of the eyes, but so subtly my fingers could barely feel a gentle pattern of risings and fallings in the wood. I brushed my hands over the top and felt a similar pattern.
"You were right," Maelowen said softly. "He's like a child with a midwinter's gift."
"You haven't seen the best of it yet," Alvaron replied. "Wait until he starts. The boy has a mind like an iron hammer."
"How do you open it?" I asked.
I turned it in my hands and felt something shift inside. There were no obvious hinges or lid, not even a seam where a lid might be. It looked for all the world like a single piece of dark and weighty wood. But I knew it was a box of some sort. It felt like a box. It wanted to be opened.
"We don't know," Maelowen said.
She might have continued, but her husband hushed her gently.
"What's inside?"
I tilted it again, feeling the contents shift.
"We don't know," she repeated.
The wood itself was interesting. It was dark enough to be Roa, but it had a deep red grain. What's more, it seemed to be a spice wood. It smelled faintly of something. A familiar smell I couldn't quite put my finger on. I lowered my face to its surface and breathed in deeply through my nose, something almost like lemon. It was maddeningly familiar.
"What sort of wood is this?"
Their silence was answer enough. I looked up and met their eyes.
"You don't give a body much to work with, do you?"
I smiled to soften any offense the words might bring. Alvaron sat forward in his chair.
"You must admit," he said with thinly veiled excitement, "this is a most excellent question. You've shown me your gift at guessing before."
His eyes glittered gray.
"So what can you guess about this?"
"It's an heirloom," I said easily. "Very old. How old would you think?" Alvaron interjected hungrily.
"Perhaps 3,000 years, I said, "give or take."
Maelowen stiffened in surprise.
"I am close to your own guesses, I take it."
She nodded mutely.
"The carving has no doubt been eroded over the long years of handling."
"Carving?"
Alvaron asked, leaning forward in his chair.
"It's very faint," I said, closing my eyes. "But I can feel it."
"I felt no such thing."
"Nor I," said Maelowen.
She seemed slightly offended. "I have exceptionally sensitive hands," I said honestly. "They're necessary for my work."
"Your magic?"
she asked, with a well-hidden hint of childlike awe.
"And music," I said, "if you'll allow me."
She nodded. So I took her hand in my own and pressed it to the top of the box.
"There.
Can you feel it?" She furrowed her forehead in concentration.
"Perhaps just a bit."
She took her hand away.
"Are you sure it's a carving?"
"It's too regular to be an accident."
"How can it be you haven't noticed it before? Isn't it mentioned in any of your histories?"
Maelowen was taken aback.
"No one would think of writing down anything regarding the Loklos box. Haven't I said this is the most secret of secrets?"
"Show me," Alvaron said. I guided his fingers over the pattern. He frowned.
"Nothing. My fingers must be too old. Could it be letters?"
I shook my head. "It's a flowing pattern, like scroll work. But it doesn't repeat. It changes." A thought struck me.
"It might be a Yilish story knot."
"Can you read it?" Alvaron asked.
I ran my fingers over it. "I don't know enough Yilish to read a simple knot if I had the string between my fingers." I shook my head. "Besides, the knots would have changed in the last 3,000 years. I know a few people who might be able to translate it at the university."
Alvaron looked to Maelowen,
but she shook her head firmly. "I will not have this spoken of to strangers."
The mayor seemed disappointed by this answer, but didn't press the point. Instead, he turned back to me.
"Let me ask you your own questions back again. What sort of wood is it?"
"It's lasted 3,000 years, I mused aloud. "It's heavy despite being hollow, so it has to be a slow wood, like hornbeam or a rennel. Its color and weight make me think it has a good deal of metal in it too, like roa."
"Probably iron and copper," I shrugged.
"That's the best I can do."
"What's inside it?"
I thought for a long moment before saying anything.
"Something smaller than a salt box," I began.
Maelowin smiled, but Alvaron gave the barest of frowns, so I hurried on.
"Something metal, by the way the weight shifts when I tilt it."
I closed my eyes and listened to the padded thump of its contents moving in the box.
"No. By the weight of it, perhaps something made of glass or stone."
"Something precious," Alvaron said. I opened my eyes.
"Not necessarily. It has become precious because it is old, and because it has been with a family for so long. It is also precious because it is a mystery. But was it precious to begin with?"
I shrugged. "Who can say?"
"But you lock up precious things," Alvaron pointed out.
"Precisely." I held up the box, displaying its smooth face.
"This isn't locked up. In fact, it might be locked away. It may be something dangerous."
"Why would you say that?" Alvaron asked curiously.
"Why go through this trouble?" Maelowin protested. "Why save something dangerous? If something is dangerous, you destroy it."
She seemed to answer her own question as soon as she had voiced it.
"Unless it was precious as well as dangerous."
"Perhaps it was too useful to destroy," Alvaron suggested.
"Perhaps it couldn't be destroyed," I said.
"Last and best," Alvaron said, leaning forward even further in his seat.
"How do you open it?"
I gave the box a long look, turned it in my hands, pressed the sides. I ran my fingers over the patterns, feeling for a seam my eyes could not detect. I shook it gently, tasted the air around it, held it to the light.
"I have no idea," I admitted.
Alvaron slumped a little.
"It was too much to expect, I suppose.
Perhaps some piece of magic?"
I hesitated to tell him that sort of magic only existed in stories.
"None I have at my command."
"Have you ever considered simply cutting it open?"
Alvaron asked his wife. Maelowin looked every bit as horrified as I felt at the suggestion.
"Never," she said as soon as she caught her breath. "It is the very root of our family. I would sooner think of salting every acre of our lands."
"And hard as this wood is," I hurried to say, "you would most likely ruin whatever was inside, especially if it is delicate."
"It was only a thought,"
Alvaron reassured his wife.
"An ill-considered one,"
Maelowin said sharply, then seemed to regret her words.
"I'm sorry, but the very thought..."
She trailed off, obviously distraught. He patted her hand.
"I understand, my dear. You're right. It was ill-considered."
"Might I put it away now?"
Maelowin asked him. I reluctantly handed the box back to Maelowin. "If there were a lock, I could attempt to circumvent it, but I can't even make a guess at where the hinge might be, or the seam for the lid."
"In a box, no lid or locks. Lackless keeps her husband's rocks."
The child's skipping rhyme ran madly through my head, and I only barely managed to turn my laugh into a cough. Alvaron didn't seem to notice.
"As always, I trust to your discretion."
He got to his feet.
"Unfortunately, I fear I have used up the better portion of our time. I'm certain you have other matters to attend to. Shall we meet tomorrow to discuss the Emir, second bell?"
I had risen to my feet with the mayor.
"If it please your grace, I have another matter that warrants some discussion."
He gave me a serious look.
"I trust this is an important matter."
"Most urgent, your grace," I said nervously. "It should not wait another day. I would have mentioned it sooner
had we both privacy and time.
Very well. He sat back down. What presses you so direly?
Lerand, Maelowin said with slight reproach, it is past the hour. Hyannis will be waiting.
Let him wait, he said. Quoth has served me well in all regards. He does nothing lightly, and I ignore him only to my detriment.
You flatter me, Your Grace.
This matter is a grave one, I glanced at Maelowin,
and somewhat delicate as well. If your lady desires to leave, it might be for the best. If the matter is important, should I not stay?
She asked archly.
I gave the mayor a questioning look.
Anything you wish to say to me, you can tell my lady wife, he said.
I hesitated. I needed to tell Alvaron about the false troopers soon. I was sure if he heard my version of events first, I could present them in a way that cast me in a favorable light. If word came through official channels first, he might not be willing to overlook the bald facts of the situation, that I had slaughtered 9 travelers of my own free will. Despite that, the last thing I wanted was Maelowin present for the conversation. It couldn't help but complicate the situation. I tried one final time.
It is a matter most dark, Your Grace.
Alvaron shook his head, frowning slightly.
We have no secrets.
I fought down a resigned sigh and drew a thick piece of folded parchment from an inner pocket of my shade.
Is this one of the writs of patronage Your Grace has granted?
His eyes flickered over it, showing some surprise.
Yes. How did you come by it?
Oh, Lerand, Maelowin said. I knew you let the beggars travel in your lands, but I never thought you would stoop to patronizing them as well.
Only a handful of troops, he said, as befitting my rank. Every respectable household has at least a few players.
Mine, Maelowin said firmly, does not.
It is convenient to have one's own troop, Alvaron said gently, and more convenient to have several. Then one can choose the proper entertainment to accompany whatever event you might be hosting. Where do you think the musicians at our wedding came from?
When Maelowin's expression did not soften, Alvaron continued.
They are not permitted to perform anything bawdy or heathen, dear. I keep them under most close controlment, and rest assured, no town in my lands would let a troop perform unless they had a noble's writ with them.
Alvaron turned back to me.
Which brings us back to the matter at hand. How did you come to have their writ? The troop must be doing poorly without it.
I hesitated. With Maelowin here, I was unsure as to the best way to approach the subject. I'd planned on speaking to the mayor alone.
They are, Your Grace.
They were killed. The mayor showed no surprise.
I thought as much.
Such things are unfortunate, but they happen from time to time.
Maelowin's eyes flashed.
I'd give a great deal to see them happen more often.
Have you any idea who killed them? The mayor asked.
In a certain manner of speaking, Your Grace. He raised his eyebrows expectantly.
Well, then?
I did.
You did what?
I sighed. I killed the men carrying that writ, Your Grace. He stiffened in his seat.
What?
They had kidnapped a pair of girls from a town they passed through. I paused, looking for a delicate way of saying it in front of Maelowin. They were young girls, Your Grace, and the men were not kind to them.
Maelowin's expression, already hard, grew cold as ice at this.
But before she could speak, Alvaron demanded incredulously,
And you took it on yourself to kill them? An entire troop of performers I had given license to?
He rubbed his forehead.
How many were there?
9.
Good Lord!
I think he did right, Maelowin said hotly. I say you give him a score of guards and let him do the same to every ravel band of rue he finds within your lands.
My dear, Alvaron said with a touch of sternness, I don't care for them much more than you, but law is law when—
Law is what you make it, she interjected. This man has done you a noble service. You should grant him fief and title and set him on your council. "He killed 9 of my subjects," Alvaron pointed out sternly. "When men step outside the rule of law, anarchy results. If I heard of this in passing, I would hang him for a bandit."
"He killed 9 Rue rapists, 9 murdering rabble thieves. 9 fewer Edema men in the world is a service to us all."
Maelowin looked at me.
"Sir, I think you did nothing but what was right and proper."
Her misdirected praise did nothing but fan the fire beneath my temper.
"Not all of them were men, m'lady," I said to her.
Maelowin paled a bit at that remark. Alvaron rubbed his face with a hand.
"Good lord, man, your honesty is like a felling axe."
"And I should mention," I said seriously, "begging both your pardons, that those I killed were not Edema Rue. They were not even a real troop."
Alvaron shook his head tiredly and tapped the writ in front of him.
"It says here otherwise. Edema Rue and troopers both.
The writ was stolen goods, Your Grace. The folk I met on the road had killed a troop of Rue and taken up their place."
He gave me a curious look.
"You seem rather certain of it."
"One of them told me so, Your Grace. He admitted they were merely impersonating a troop. They were pretending to be Rue."
Maelowin looked as if she couldn't decide whether she was confused or sickened by the thought.
"Who would pretend such a thing?"
Alvaron nodded.
"My wife makes a point," he said. "It seems more likely that they lied to you. Who wouldn't deny such a thing? Who would willingly admit to being one of the Edema Rue?"
I felt myself flush hot at this, suddenly ashamed that I had concealed my Edema Rue blood for all this time.
"I don't doubt your original troop were Edema Rue, Your Grace. But the men I killed were not. No Rue would do the things they did."
Maelowin's eyes flashed furiously.
"You do not know them."
I met her eyes.
"My lady, I think I know them rather well."
"But why?" Alvaron asked. "Who in their right mind would try to pass themselves off as Edema Rue?"
"For ease of travel," I said,
"and the protection your name offers."
He shrugged my explanation away.
"They were probably Rue that tired of honest work and took up thieving instead."
"No, Your Grace," I insisted.
"They were not Edema Rue."
Alvaron gave me a reproachful look.
"Come now, who can tell the difference between bandits and a band of Rue?"
"There is no difference," Maelowin said crisply.
"Your Grace, I would know the difference," I said hotly. "I am Edema Rue."
Silence. Maelowin's expression turned from blank shock to disbelief to rage to disgust. She came to her feet, looked for a moment as if she would spit on me, then walked stiffly out the door. There was a clatter as her personal guard came to attention and followed her out of the outer rooms. Alvaron continued to look at me, his face severe.
"If this is a joke, it is a poor one."
"It is none, Your Grace," I said, wrestling with my temper. "And why have you found it necessary to hide this from me?"
"I have not hidden it, Your Grace. You yourself have mentioned several times that I am far from gentle birth."
He struck the arm of his chair angrily.
"You know what I mean! Why did you never mention that you were one of the Rue?"
"I think the reason rather obvious, Your Grace," I said stiffly, trying to keep from spitting out the words. "The words Edema Rue have too strong a smell for many gentle noses.
Your wife has found her perfume cannot cover it."
"My lady has had unfortunate dealings with the Rue in the past," he said by way of explanation. "You would do well to note."
"I know of her sister, her family's tragic shame. Run off and love a trooper. How terrible!"
I said scathingly, my entire body prickling with hot rage.
"Her sister's sense does credit to her family, less so the actions of your lady wife. My blood is worth as much as any man's, and more than most. And even were it not, she has no leave to treat me as she did."
Alvaron's expression hardened.
"I rather think that she has leave to treat you as she will," he said. "She was simply startled by your sudden proclamation. Given her feelings about you, rabble,
I think she showed remarkable restraint. I think she rues the truth. A trooper's tongue has gotten her to bed more quickly than her sister. As soon as I said it, I knew I had gone too far. I clenched my teeth to keep from saying anything worse. That will be all, Alvaron said with cold formality, his eyes flat and angry. I left with all the angry dignity I could muster, not because I had nothing else to say, but because if I had stayed one moment longer, he would have called for guards, and that is not how I wished to make my exit.